This is The Morning Show. I'm Lee Rayburn in for Kate Archer Kent this morning. And according to two recent reports from the nonprofit, nonpartisan investigative news outlet Wisconsin Watch, Wisconsin preschoolers are 5 times more likely to be expelled than K through 12 students. And that expulsion rate can be linked to the mental health of teachers. So what's happening in our early education classrooms? And are our little ones all right? How about our teachers? What can we do to help them both? We invite you to call in with your questions or thoughts during our conversation. Join us at 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas at WPR.org. Elise Loomis is an assistant professor in the College of Social Work at the University of Utah. She specializes in the impact of early childhood trauma. And Elise, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thanks for having me, Lee.
So why are students being expelled from preschool? What are the reasons for this?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I think the overarching reason is challenging behaviors. And one thing that I like to kind of caveat that with is that for preschoolers, challenging behaviors are pretty developmentally typical. I have a 1-year-old and 3-year-old myself, and I can attest to that. Preschoolers are trying to understand these big feelings that they have. They're trying to learn how to regulate their emotions, and they want to be independent and do things by themselves, and that can lead to challenges in relationships with adults. And so challenging behaviors broadly can be pretty typical. I think what leads to expulsion and suspension are behaviors that kind of go above and beyond challenging behaviors. So behaviors that are aggressive or dangerous in the classroom. This might be like flipping chairs over when they get upset, or biting another teacher or another student. Kind of a pattern of behavior like this, or it may be things that aren't dangerous but are emotionally or physically disruptive. So when I was an early childhood mental health clinician in Connecticut before coming here to Utah, I worked with a lot of children who were struggling at school in their preschool setting. And, you know, for example, one child I worked with would run out of the classroom and then a couple times ran out of the school building. And so that's something that was really disruptive both to kind of his classroom setting and to the school around him. So things that may disrupt the classroom, even if it's not dangerous. Those are things that might lead to expulsion or suspension.
Those are the reasons for young students, for mm-hmm. children. But are there structural reasons? Like, are there reasons that could be as a result of the, as you mentioned, school around him, class sizes mm-hmm. or other aspects?
Absolutely. There are so many other things kind of that interact with children's behaviors. I think one thing that's important to name is implicit and explicit biases. So we know from data, kind of a number of different data sources, that children of color are more likely to get suspended or expelled, both in preschool and kind of throughout their educational trajectories. This is especially the case for Black preschoolers and Black boys, who tend to be suspended and expelled at higher rates than kind of the proportion that they make up within the school. And this can be attributed in large part to implicit biases. So these racial biases that shape how teachers and how school personnel may perceive a child's behavior. So we know from research that children may behave in the same way, but a teacher may look at that differently or understand that differently based on the color of the child's skin. And so, we think that leads to some of these higher rates of suspension and expulsion. Boys are also more likely to get expelled, maybe because of kind of the types of behaviors that they tend to demonstrate. Children with disabilities are more likely to get suspended and expelled, and this has been seen in a number of different data sets. And then children with trauma, that's kind of my area of work, specifically children who have been exposed to things like domestic violence, child maltreatment, are at higher risk of suspension and expulsion. And I think this has to do both with the behaviors that may go along with children trying to make sense of the trauma they've experienced, but also kind of what's going on in the school environment, to kind of go to what you were saying about the school environment. Like, what resources are available at the school level for teachers to make sense of children's behaviors, to help intervene with children's behaviors? Do they have access to social emotional resources and supports? Do they have access to training on implicit bias and trauma? Do they have access to early childhood mental health consultation, which is a great model that can support teachers who are struggling with a child's challenging behavior. So it's not just the behavior, but it's kind of the context of resources also that the behavior is occurring in.
We're talking about preschool expulsion with Elise Loomis, an assistant professor in the College of Social Work at the University of Utah. And we invite you into the conversation with your questions, your comments, your experiences with your preschool, 800-642-1234. That's 800-624-1234. And Elise, what happens after a kid gets expelled from preschool or early childhood education? How does it affect a child's development from there?
Yeah, so we know that, you know, children who experience suspension and expulsion are more likely to get suspended and expelled down the line. And so it may create kind of a pattern of experiences in the educational setting. And, you know, I think this has to do with how a young child can even make sense of being expelled. Like, you know, it may lead them to think, like, is school a place for me? Do teachers like me? Am I bad? And I am curious, like, how does that drive then how children engage in future classroom settings? But, you know, preschool is not mandatory. And so it also means that a child may be excluded from an educational setting if a parent isn't able to find another place for that child to be. So it definitely has a developmental impact on the child. It also has an impact on parents and caregivers. I think both in terms of kind of the stress of navigating what it means for your child to be suspended and expelled, but also kind of the kind of economics. You know, I have worked with parents who have lost their jobs because they had to respond so many times and go pick their child up so many times from a preschool setting that they were let go from their place of work. And so I think there's a real economic impact, too, of if I can't find another childcare center or preschool for my child, what am I going to do? And thinking about kind of that kind of impact on jobs. I also think, and we don't talk about this enough in the expulsion world, but that suspension and expulsion has an impact on the teacher and on the program too. No teacher is excited to expel a child. I think I've heard from teachers who talk about just really grappling with the decision to ultimately expel a child and talking about how it can really counter their values as a teacher, you know, why they came into this profession in the first place. And so I know that there's a real impact to teachers and to program directors and school staff as well.
So as mentioned, Elise, the report from Wisconsin Watch says Wisconsin preschoolers are 5 times more likely to be expelled than the state's K-12 students. Do we know how that number compares to the national average?
We don't really know. So in that early 2005 report from Dr. Walter Gilliam that kind of launched a lot of research on early suspension and expulsion, they found that young children were at about a three times higher rate. So that 5 times is a little bit higher than the national average from 2005. But, you know, there's no good way to compare suspension and expulsion data across states. I think that's a really tricky thing in terms of how to contextualize. There's no clear definitions of suspension and expulsion. There's often not mandated tracking of suspension and expulsion, especially in these early care and education settings, which can make it hard to know, are our programs even working when we're trying to prevent expulsion? What we do know from 2016 data from the National Survey of Children's Health is that this still is really an issue. In that data, there were about 17,000 children who had been expelled and about 174,000 children who had been suspended from age 0 to 5 in the last year from their child care center. So this still is a really big issue kind of nationally, I think, because we don't have consistent ways to track data, it makes it hard to compare.
Elise Loomis is an assistant professor in the College of Social Work at the University of Utah. We're looking at preschool expulsions in Wisconsin, and you can join our conversation by calling in with your questions or your thoughts, your experiences, 800-642-1234, parents or teachers, 800-642-1234. I'm Lee Rayburn, and you're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. We'll be right back. This is The Morning Show. I'm Lee Rayburn, and we're talking about keeping kids from getting kicked out of school, preschool. Our expert is Elise Loomis, assistant professor in the College of Social Work at the University of Utah, and you can join us at 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas at WPR.org. Elise, I want to ask about COVID and the role that COVID's played on early childhood socialization, education. What kind of impact has what occurred as a result of COVID had?
To me, the biggest one of the big areas has been on teacher stress levels. And this relates to this question about what causes suspension or expulsion. We know that teacher stress and depression can have an impact on a child's risk of expulsion in their classroom. And kind of following COVID, there's a lot of data that shows that we have a really highly stressed workforce. So a recent report, a 2023 report from the Children's Equity Project, found that about 45% of the early care and education professionals that they had surveyed kind of during COVID and kind of 2020 to 2021 reported having symptoms of depression, and about 26 to 22% had reported higher stress. So I think this thinking about kind of how teachers kind of rallied during COVID and the impact of COVID on teacher stress levels, and then just on the numbers in the workforce, that there's a lot of teacher shortages, and thinking about what that does to classroom sizes, what that does to the stress levels of the teachers who are there, and how that impacts children, the classroom quality of children's learning environments.
And just to follow up on that, Elise, the nonprofit advocacy organization Raising Wisconsin says the state has a child care professional turnover rate of over 40%. So what is the role of staffing shortages in these expulsions of preschool children? And what does this mean? What does this mean for their education?
Yeah, it's such a national issue. I mean, to go back to teacher stress, like if folks are leaving my school setting, that can place a higher burden on the teachers who are still there, and that can lead to expulsion rates. Student-teacher relationships are also really important, both in terms of thinking about children's educational experiences and their developmental outcomes, especially in early childhood. Relationships are so important, are such like a framework for children for learning how to understand emotions and regulate emotions. So I think about a child who is in a classroom with teachers who kind of are coming and going, or where there's a lot of turnover, and think about what that does to a child's relationship with teachers in their classroom. My own work has found that close relationships with teachers can help buffer the impact of tough behavior on expulsion risk. So a warm relationship with a teacher can be really protective for students against expulsion. And if there's a lot of turnover, I, as a child, may not have time to develop that warm relationship that can serve as that buffer. I think this is really especially critical for certain groups of kids, such as kids who've experienced trauma, for whom the student-teacher relationship may be even more critical.
Elise Loomis, assistant professor in the College of Social Work at the University of Utah, taking a look at preschool expulsions and what can be done on behalf of our youngest ones and on behalf of our educators. 1-800-642-1234 to join us, 800-642-1234. Julian Madison joins us now. Julie, good morning.
Good morning.
Hi, what do you got for us?
Well, I'm wondering, has the professor looked at things from the point of view of the student? I'm an autism spectrum disorder 1. I've got advanced degrees, pretty good job, terrible record in early school. The teachers couldn't get their brains around not touching me, and that I wanted to and intended to sit under my desk.
Julie, I very much appreciate that and a certain perspective from a student who had, you know, different needs. Elise?
I think that is such a wonderful question. I know work has been done with older children who have experienced suspension and expulsion. Dr. Charles Bell has a great book out related to suspension for older youth, particularly Black youth who've experienced suspension and expulsion. In the preschool setting, I don't know of work, and I haven't done it myself, from the student perspective specifically, like in terms of asking young kids, how are you understanding what's happening to you? How are you making sense of that? I think that's a really important gap that you're identifying that we need to bring into these conversations.
Yeah, Julie, so grateful for your perspective, and thank you for joining us. Elise, what would the alternatives be for preventing expulsion for students who could be seen as disruptive, who might be perceived as dangerous in the classroom, classrooms which mm-hmm. may have, newer teachers who might have their own implicit biases? What can we do as opposed to expelling the students?
I know a lot of schools are trying to build in training and professional development. Another resource that is being talked about a lot in the expulsion prevention world is infant and early childhood mental health consultation. So this is a really lovely model that brings in trained mental health consultants into the school environment to support teachers who are struggling with a child's challenging behavior. So it may be providing training, it may be providing coaching, it may be providing a reflective space where a teacher can kind of think about, you know, what might my biases be, or my past experiences, and how might those be coming into my relationship with this child. So that's a model that's shown some promise in terms of reducing overall kind of risks and rates of expulsion, and also shows some promise in terms of reducing disparities, racial disparities in particular, within those rates. Some other things that are being done kind of at a statewide level, not necessarily at the school level, but statewide supports, are kind of providing statewide supports for training and consultation for early childhood education providers. So there's a model in Arkansas called Behavior Help, where they coordinate training, technical assistance, and mental health consultation resources for early care and education providers. Another one in Ohio, the Preschool Expulsion Prevention Partnership, that again provides training and consultation to licensed preschools, family child care providers, Head Start programs, private preschools. So I think states are thinking about how can we help fill the need in terms of training and real kind of like one-on-one supports for teachers and provide those resources. Another thing that a lot of states are doing is trying to pass legislation related to reducing or eliminating the use of suspension and expulsion in preschool settings or early care and education settings broadly. Some colleagues and I did a review of kind of any of the legislation out there back in 2019, and we had found there were 12 states who had either proposed or passed this type of legislation. And, you know, one of the things that we had highlighted there is that although this legislation can be one step, we really need those resources and the financial supports for those resources to go along with it. It's not enough to say you just can't expel a child without providing what to do instead and some supports for teachers.
What a survey from 2021 says 29 states have developed some policies about expulsion or suspension in early child and care and education environments. Do we know the effects these policies have had, what the outcomes are?
Yeah, so more and more states are doing that. You see the difference between our 2019 survey and that 2021. So there's a few states that have tried to track kind of what are outcomes. So, for example, there's a report by Child Trends where they interviewed folks after the Maryland implementation of legislation in 2017. And there's some mixed findings. They find that staff were accessing more trainings, but that there was kind of a lack of clarity about the policy and what it meant for discipline. So, like, everyone may not have had the information at every program, or may not have totally understood, like, what does this mean for my school? And they also found that schools were using suspension and expulsion less, but were relying on informal or soft exclusion. So things like revoking a child's transportation. And if a parent can't get a child to school, then that child's essentially kind of barred from that school environment, or a parent being told that their child's just not a good fit. A colleague of mine, Dr. Kate Zinser in Illinois, looked at the legislation that was passed in Illinois in 2018 and found similar things. Like, there was variation about how knowledgeable folks were about the law, And they really highlighted the gaps in terms of infant and early childhood mental health consultation, that, again, we can pass this legislation, but we need to really back it up with resources for schools.
Elise, thanks so much for joining us this morning.
Thank you so much for having me.
Elise Loomis, assistant professor in the College of Social Work at the University of Utah. And if you want to connect with The Morning Show on social media, you can always find us online on Facebook at The Ideas Network. And your comments are still welcome anytime at ideas@WPR.org. I'm Lee Rayburn, and you're listening to The Morning Show on The Ideas Network. Morning Show. I'm Lee Rayburn in for Kate Archer Kent, and earlier this month, UW Oshkosh announced plans to lay off about 200 employees and furlough all other staff. This week, the interim chancellor for UW Parkside proposed a campus-wide furlough and partial hiring freeze, while UW Platteville's chancellor said they're considering both furloughs and layoffs. 10 out of 13 University of Wisconsin campuses are starting their fiscal year with structural budget deficits. So, what's happening to the University of Wisconsin system? We invite you to into our conversation at 1-800-642-1234, 800-642-1234, or email ideas@WPR.org. Our guest, Jay Rothman, president of the University of Wisconsin system. And President Rothman, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thanks very much, Lee. It's great to be with you this morning.
Yeah, and talking about the UW Parkside and UW Platteville proposals from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel earlier this week, you're quoted as saying that their announcements were disappointing, but, quote, not unexpected. Why?
I think, Lee, we are facing a perfect storm. We've had a 10-year period where we have had flat to declining state support on an inflation-adjusted basis. During that same time period, we had a decades-long tuition freeze, 8 years of which imposed by the legislature, which really reduced our ability to collect revenue. Couple that with a declining enrollment, both driven by demographics and lower birth rates, but more importantly, by the level of participation, fewer high school graduates going on to higher education. And you add on to that inflation. And the inflationary pressures over the last couple of years. And, you know, quite frankly, it is not surprising. Our universities have been consuming their reserves at an unsustainable rate. And we set forth in our strategic plan that was adopted last year by the Board of Regents a requirement that our universities eliminate those structural deficits so that they can maintain long-term financial health.
So what does this mean for the quality of education being provided by the University of Wisconsin system as you see it, President Rothman?
You know, we are doing everything within our power to ensure that we protect our students as best we can. I think Oshkosh is a great example. Chancellor Andy Leavitt made it very clear that the cuts were going to, you know, be away from the educational mission as best we could. You know, we are focused on the 161,000 students that we have the privilege of educating. We believe this education changes the trajectory of their lives, changes the trajectory of their families' lives, and also changes the trajectory of our state and the world, quite frankly, because our graduates go on to do amazing things. So we are committed to that core mission, and we will do our best with the resources that we have afforded to us to achieve that objective.
You mentioned declining enrollment, and I want to know from your perspective how the UW system can address declining enrollment in a way that doesn't impact the quality of education and the system.
Yeah, I think there are a couple things. Certainly, we've got the declining birth rates, and we know what our high school graduates are going to be 18 years from now. That's just the math allows you to make that calculation. If it was just that demographic change, I think it would be manageable for the UW system. I think the bigger culprit in all of this is the participation rate. There are fewer high school students that are going on to higher education, whether that be in the tech college system or in the university system. I would submit that that does not bode well for the future of the state of Wisconsin. We are increasingly moving into a technology-driven knowledge economy. And we're going to have too many people in our state that are going to be faced in trying to be competitive on a world basis without higher education. I think that's going to be a challenge for Wisconsin and its long-term economic viability.
In the University of Wisconsin, UW system, what makes the University of Wisconsin-Madison different? I know it's the largest in the system, but is it an outlier in some ways compared to the other campuses, President Rothman?
Well, I think it is. I mean, as our flagship, but I think if you look at any, university system across the country, the flagship is normally in a different position. It is a substantial R1 research institution, ranked eighth in the nation in terms of funding for that research mission. I think that in and of itself really distinguishes the flagship. We've got 12 other great universities that still educate the bulk of the students that come through the UW system, but Madison is a very important component of that. And I think we can all be proud of what UW-Madison achieves every single day.
Madison's enrollment seems to have been at least stable, if not increasing, in recent years.
It has been, and I think that is consistent with the pattern we're seeing across the country, where the flagship universities tend to be doing better than some of the other universities. And I think part of our objective is moving forward is certainly to ensure that Madison remains strong, because I think that is critical not only for the UW system, but it's critical for the state of Wisconsin. But I also think we have to be very clear about the quality of education that is being delivered in our other 12 universities and the great work that they are doing and the great thing that their graduates are doing. When you look at what graduates of all of our university system schools do, whether it's Madison or it's Green Bay or Oshkosh or Superior, and just go down the list, Milwaukee, all those graduates go on to do great things, not only in the state of Wisconsin, but across the world.
We're talking about financial challenges facing Wisconsin State Universities with Jay Rothman, president of the UW system, and we invite you to the conversation with your questions for the president or your comments at 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. President Rothman, State Representative Mark Bourne, and State Senator Howard Markline lead the legislature's budget committee, and they responded to some criticism recently from Democrats about the cuts in funding by saying that student enrollment decline should lead to the right-sizing, their words, right-sizing of budgets. What's your response to that?
Well, I would look at it and say we have a responsibility to be good financial stewards of our resources going forward, but I don't think we can overlook the fact of a recent survey that came out that showed our university system being funded 42nd out of 50 states in the nation in terms of the state support of our public university system. That's not where I would have expected Wisconsin to be, having grown up in this state and lived in this state my entire life. I look at that and say that's not the Wisconsin that I knew. Certainly growing up, 42 out of 50 should not be good enough for us. So I think it's a balance. I think, yes, we have to be good financial stewards, but I think if we're going to have a strong university system that fulfills its mission to the state, and that's what we are here to do, we are here to support the state of Wisconsin, we need to have the financial resources to do that as well.
Governor Evers' initial budget proposal, I believe, included more than $300 in additional funding for the UW system. The end result of the state budget passed this summer cuts $32 million in funding for the UW system. What effect does that have on campuses system-wide, President Rothman?
You know, certainly the recommendation from Governor Evers north of $300 million in terms of support versus a cut of $32 million simply made it more difficult for us to fulfill our mission. We continue to want to and look forward to partnering with the legislature and the executive branch to ensure that the university system remains strong. But we are committed to functioning within the resources that we have. We need to eliminate those structural deficits, and we're going to need to take, you know, actions like have been that have been taken at Oshkosh and that, you know, that Parkside and Platteville are looking at. And our other universities are not having quite the financial challenge right now, but they still have to address their structural deficits in order to meet our strategic target of eliminating them by 2028.
Let's go to your calls and questions and comments now at 1-800-642-1234. Anjali joins us in Madison. Anjali, you're on the air with President Jay Rothman. Are you there?
Yes, hello.
Hi.
Yes, I'm here. Sorry, I had to remove my phone from speaker. I just wanted to let Jay Rothman know in support that the system schools are absolutely integral to both the future of Wisconsin, which I know he knows, but also for the future economy of Wisconsin. And I do hope the state legislature changes their tune and supports the future of both UW-Madison and UW-System, because in this last several years, the funding has dwindled.
Thank you, Anjali. And President Rothman, I'd ask, you, from your perspective, you came from the private sector, you've led this system now for a little more than a year. How do you view the university system as an economic engine for the state and what it can do for our economy?
Well, I certainly agree with Anjali that it is absolutely critical. Having grown up in this state, I have seen the impact that this system has had on our state for my entire lifetime and well before that. And I think you can look at whatever statistical data you want to. I think there is an enormous return on investment when the state invests in the university system. The economic impact of that is significant, I think it is a very compelling case to make additional investment in the state. And in fact, you know, we're going to be asking for additional dollars that were set aside by the legislature in a supplemental fund that the Joint Finance Committee will be looking at. We will be putting together and are working on a proposal to seek that $32 million that was withheld, focused on workforce. Wisconsin is in a war for talent right now. Every employer feels that. We are not graduating enough nurses and engineers and data and computer scientists and people in the business fields and so on. We think we will put a very compelling proposal in front of the Joint Finance Committee to support workforce, and that's what the budget legislation provided, is that if we can put that compelling case forward, we would get that funding, and I'm very confident we will put something in front of the legislature that is a compelling case for the betterment of our state.
But President Rothman, that $32 million figure that came from cuts to the university system in this year's state budget, according to Assembly Speaker Robin Voss, this is intended to eliminate the diversity, equity, and inclusion programs in the UW system. And is there any discussion about whether or not that is on the table?
I mean, I think we've been clear, and I've made my position clear around the DE&I space. That space has to be predominantly focused on student success. We need to recruit, retain, and graduate as many students as we can. And looking at diversity on a broad lens, it is certainly ethnicity and minority status, but it is also diversity of thought. It is veteran status. It's disabled students with disabilities. And that list kind of goes on. We want all of our students to be successful and give them the support that they need. That's what the focus of that effort really is. And that's critical for us to win the war for talent. You know, Wisconsin is a diverse state. If we're not attracting and retaining and graduating students from across different spectrums of diversity, Wisconsin's not going to be successful. We will not win that war for talent. We won't have enough nurses and engineers and so forth. That's what our focus is. We are here to serve the state of Wisconsin. We are here to serve the state's workforce needs.
What was the importance of diversity, equity, and inclusion from the perspective of the private sector? As you led the law firm Foley and Lardner, what did you see as the value of DEI there?
It was absolutely essential to us for a couple of reasons. One is we wanted to be able to attract the best talent we could find. And in order to do that, you had to be open to and supportive of diversity, because that talent will come to you in all different perspectives. And if you narrow your focus, you will not get the talent that you need. And secondly, our clients were insisting on it, that we have a diverse workforce. We know that adds to diversity of thought. We know that adds to better outcomes, because you understand different perspectives differently. That's why the business community, in my judgment, is very supportive of efforts to enhance diversity within their own organizations. And it was certainly something that we focused on very directly at Foley.
So DEI is just good business?
In my judgment, absolutely.
Jay Rothman, president of the University of Wisconsin System, and we invite you to join our conversation at 800-642-1234. We're looking at the campuses across the state, the deficits many of them are facing, and the future of public higher education in the state of Wisconsin, and what that means for our economy and our culture. All of us, join us. 800-642-1234. I'm Lee Rayburn, and you're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. This is The Morning Show. I'm Lee Rayburn, and our guest is the president of the University of Wisconsin System, Jay Rothman. He says a recent study found that state funding for our Wisconsin universities ranks 42nd out of 50 states. So what do you want to ask him about funding of state universities? Or what do you want to tell him about our university system? 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas@wpr.org. And it's hard not to ask or consider what could have been if the $300+ million that was proposed by Governor Evers ended up in the final budget in additional funding for the UW system. What would that money have meant to you and the students in the UW system, President Rothman?
I think it would have allowed us to invest in building the capacity to help provide the graduates that the state needs. We have constraints in terms of nursing faculty, for example, our ability to hire enough of them. They are expensive because of the market demands, and our inability to hire them limits the number of nurses that we can graduate. But I think it's also to provide the you know, additional services that students need. It is one thing to recruit students into the university, but then to retain them and graduate them, between academic advising and career counseling and those types of services that allow those students to successfully transition through their undergraduate process and go on to be very productive and well-educated students and graduates that will go on to do great things. Those are the investments we want to make. You know, ultimately, that serves the state of Wisconsin. We are here to serve our students, and that in turn helps us fulfill our mission of serving the state of Wisconsin. Those are the resources that we need. You know, at the same time, as I mentioned earlier, we have a responsibility to run our system as efficiently as we possibly can, and those additional dollars would not have changed our focus on ensuring that we run ourselves as efficiently as possible. But I think you can make a very credible argument that our system has been starved for the last 10 years. And, you know, the actions that were taken recently are reflective of some of the financial challenges some of our universities are enduring.
Well, it's interesting because we've talked on, I've heard on this show about nursing shortages, its impact on health services in Wisconsin, its impact on the economy in Wisconsin, and you can connect that then back to the limited number of nurses that can we can graduate with the access that the university has to funding this UW system. I don't know how many people have put that together before, but it was a couple months ago now, and you said there could be more campus closures, higher tuition rates if funding were cut. Funding was cut to the UW system, so President Rothman, are closures and higher tuition rates still on the table for us?
You know, I would look at it this way. Our goal is to ensure that our 13 universities are financially stable, and that's what we're focusing on. We are looking at the branch campuses and see what we can do to have those be good points of access, but also be financially sustainable as well going forward. But I'd like to go back to the point that you made around nursing, because I think nursing is just one piece of it. And I would separate the types of jobs into two different categories. You know, nursing, which is going to be much more, you know, located in the state, and teachers located in the state, if we're not graduating enough of them, and right now we are not, to satisfy the needs of employers in the state, the quality by definition is going to be less. But I think we also have to be worried about are not educating enough and graduating enough engineers and data scientists and computer scientists and business and finance people, because those jobs are movable. I saw that in my experience in the private sector. And if you can't fill the jobs in the state of Wisconsin, those jobs will move and they will never come back here. And Wisconsin will be damaged economically as a result of that. This is a serious issue for our state going forward. The university system can be a partner in helping the state solve that issue. But if we're not, if we don't have the resources to do the job that we need to do, I think we have to think about what does Wisconsin look like 5 and 10 and 15 years from now, because it will not be as economically vibrant as it could and should have been.
Let's go to your questions for our guest, UW System President Jay Rothman, at 1-800-642-1234 to join the show. George in Ashland, you're on the air.
Good morning. Up here in Ashland, University of Wisconsin Extension Services are really important to us, I think, all around the state, especially here in the rural part of the state. And I would like to hear about the perspectives for the future of the University of Wisconsin Extension Services. Thank you.
Thank you, George. Yeah, the UW System Extension. President Rothman?
George, I appreciate the question. I absolutely agree with you. I grew up outside of Wausau, and I appreciate it because I benefited from those extension services, and we want to do our best within the financial resources that we can have to continue to provide those services, because when you think about extension, it's beyond just our university campuses. It's really a component of the Wisconsin idea where the university system touches all aspects of the state of Wisconsin, and we will do our best to ensure that those services can continue to be, to continue to benefit the citizens and residents of our state.
With about a minute left here, President Rothman, do we have some sort of timeline in which some of these decisions would be made about more campus closures or higher tuition rates or the future of the UW system? What's your timeline look like?
I mean, we are continuing to execute on our five-year strategic plan, and there are a variety of aspects associated with that strategic plan. I don't have specific timelines in terms of when this action will occur or that action will occur. We want to do it in a thoughtful and very deliberate way. But we've already started to affect some changes. You've seen that. But I don't want to lose sight of the fact that, you know, this is still a great university system. We educate 161,000 students. We have 37,000 graduates annually. We're trying to get that to 41,000 to serve the needs of the state. But I look at it on an individual by individual student basis. This education changes the trajectory of their lives. That is an extraordinarily great mission. And I am proud of everyone within the university system that helps achieve that mission for our students in the system schools.
Hey, President Rothman, thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Thanks very much. I appreciate your time.
Jay Rothman, president of the University of Wisconsin System. For disclosure, Wisconsin Public Radio is a service of UW-Madison. I'm Lee Rayburn, UW-Madison graduate, and you're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.